You're listening to Munch, a podcast and website where we pair meals with movies. I'm Ben.
I'm Andre.
I'm Leanna.
And this week, we're here talking about Spider-Man Homecoming. This is our part two in the Spider-Man series. We watched the originals, or the previous entries into the Spider-Man franchise. Now we're here watching the Sony and Marvel kind of finally coming together, able to have all the Avengers, or the idea of the Avengers even, and everyone else. And this was Tom Holland's first big film as Spider-Man, I guess. Maybe not his first big film, but hey, he's Spider-Man. He's the new Spider-Man.
First big film that I had seen him in.
Same.
Yeah. I don't think I've actually ever seen him in another film that I've watched, that I mean by that.
Yeah, but he did good. Yeah, I liked him. I mean, other than Captain America Civil War and being Spider-Man in that.
Yeah. He was like...
Same character. Like, he did not change a whole lot between Captain America and the Spider-Man, but I liked him a lot.
Yeah. Should we just open up to talk about Spider-Man, the character at large, before we kind of talk about the finer details of the plot and things like
that? Oh, yeah. And there are going to be spoilers for Spider-Man Homecoming, yes. Of course.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Well, yeah. I think we do spoilers every episode, but this is an episode that is actually just came out this
movie,
weekend.
Yes.
Yeah. So
spoilers that matter.
Even more important.
You know what you're getting into if you're listening to the rest of this podcast.
Right.
Not that there's anything in this film that's going to really... there's like one thing that is like a nice moment and it ramps up the tension, but there's nothing that's going to be like, oh, it's going to totally kill your experience for this film. I don't think.
Yeah. Well.
You know what you're getting into if you're getting into a superhero
and Marvel. The spoiler warning has gone on too long.
Right. So, Spider-Man the character.
Spider-Man the character.
I thought it was interesting that... It wasn't until the very end and the final showdown that Tom Holland showed any blood, any ripped, not even ripped clothing, actually. His clothing was still intact. He just had, like, a slightly bruised eye.
Yeah, like, even, like, an entire structure falls down on him. And there was actually a moment there where I think it was just water, but it looked like there was blood on his head.
I thought
it was blood on his head.
And I was like, wow, this is going to be really cool. It's going to like humanize him in a weird way.
Yeah, I thought the same thought because I was like, God, finally, like he has been so beaten down so many times. Like, it's not to say that like he hasn't had intense fight scenes yet, but he just never showed, like his suit was always flawless. Yeah. He would take the mask off and he would look totally fine.
Yeah.
And I remember in both of the other films, especially in The Amazing Spider-Man, there's a scene where Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man gets like a pretty intense gash from the lizard across his suit.
Yeah.
And they show that gash in like media surrounding advertising that film because it showed that he got in this, and I don't know, it was like part of the fight scene or whatever. And same with Peter Parker, Tobey Maguire.
They're all Peter Parker.
And same with Tobey Maguire's, when he's in his final scene with the Green Goblin, his like suit mask is torn to pieces and he like spits blood at one, like it's brutal. And Tom Holland really didn't have the same, they didn't do the same thing with him.
I mean, like Marvel movies in general, they don't, especially now, they don't do as much blood as other superhero movies. There's not
a whole
lot. That's
true. Do you think
In Civil War, there's a little bit. I think what's actually part of it is they hit on multiple points. This guy is just a sophomore in high school. He's 15 years old. And so the idea of like seeing blood and damage as a result of fighting with adults on a kid who's supposed to be 15 years old, like, it's slightly a different messaging and tonal structure than, like, in Civil War, where it's just adults fighting.
Yeah, and it's not something I think Marvel is comfortable dealing with, so that's probably why they didn't do it. But I thought it was interesting. It makes him a very different Spider-Man than the other two.
Even though it's weird, he's, like, still in these fights, and he's getting relatively beat up a couple times. Like, as I mentioned, an entire building falls on him.
Yeah.
And yet he's, like, kind of okay. Like, there's a moment where he thought, like...
Pretty much okay.
He's in rough shape. Then he just kind of, like, shakes it off a little bit. And he's like, I'm good.
Yeah.
That is the unspoken rule of every superhero is that they have, they're invincible.
Yeah. Like, without a doubt.
Especially Marvel.
Yeah. There's just like a point in which like it helps you to see, like, there's no stake otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Like if he can come out of anything and be okay, like I never believe that he's actually in danger then, even though I know as a viewer that, hey, the superhero is going to come out on top no matter what. But that idea of danger
kind
of builds up the suspense for the big fight and those moments.
Especially with this Spider-Man, because in the other two, because you actually see them bleed, you're reminded that there's a human underneath the suit and that humans can die fairly easily. So it was especially him kind of coming back from that building, falling on him and just continuing to go full steam ahead. He feels stronger, more invincible than the other Spider-Man that we've seen.
Yeah.
I think we all enjoyed
this depiction of Spider-Man.
I did. I was going to say, I actually thought he was a very human Spider-Man, teenage Spider-Man, kind of the Spider-Man I want to see. Tobey Maguire was a very adult depiction of Spider-Man, and Andrew Garfield was a little bit more high school Spider-Man, but
like
cool.
Late high school also?
Yeah, late high school. He was a cool kid, and this was like nerdy, excitable, science geek Spider-Man.
Also, like, Leanna, in your defense of, you kind of talk about how that depiction of Peter Parker isn't like perfect. He's not that smart, but like by strength of will, he becomes who he is. And that version of Peter Parker is also very awkward. And like, you get some of that in this new Tom Holland Peter Parker, in like moments where he's trying to become Spider-Man, but he doesn't just quite understand all the mechanics of it yet. And I think there's a very distinct scene as he like shoots his web out, but then is just like dragged against the floor because he misjudged the distance of it. And I think that like is a good, like, it has the high points of what that Sam Raimi / Tobey Maguire Spider-Man has, while also the smart, capable moments that the Andrew Garfield Peter Parker had. It's like an interesting combination of the two.
What I really liked is this was the first Spider-Man movie in this... Now I'm spacing on his name.
Tom Holland.
Tom Holland.
Tom Holland's franchise. Like a weird name.
It is.
Like, it's not a household name yet, so it's not just like, Gwyneth Paltrow. Like,
right. It's Tom Holland.
That is technically a weird name, but we're used to it now. So
the first Spider-Man movie, first superhero movie, you usually have the origin story, and then you have this thing I always like in the first superhero movie where they explore their powers. And they did that in a different way in this movie because it picks up with Tom Holland already having been Spider-Man, having been in a Avengers mission, going back to school, they still were able to show off what the superhero can do by having him unlock, abilities that were cut off from his suit before. And he has that, like, kind of, I don't know what I can do, I'm trying to figure it out as we go. This is a cool thing I can do kind of moment. Yeah. And I thought I was kind of bummed that they weren't going to have that in the Spider-Man. And I was glad they were able to find a way to have that, like, wow, I didn't even know I could do this moment, which I always think is cool in superhero movies.
Yeah. Like, such to play off that a little bit, I think it's such an interesting, how they bridged this film is, and even though this is technically the first Spider-Man, like, they have to do some bridging of, like, what that character is and filling in the gaps. But I felt like it was really well written, and that's like, hey, here's a moment that Peter can tell his friend how he got his powers without them actually having to show that in this franchise. Or kind of, as you mentioned, him exploring his powers and still having that, like, learning who he is moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really just felt like the writing on this film was actually really solid across the board and did a good job of depicting who Spider-Man and Peter Parker was while kind of building up the characters around him at the same time.
He had a lot of the quippy one-liners and witty banter with the people he's like trying to thwart, which I thought was it was more reminiscent of Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man than it was of Tobey Maguire's.
You know what I really liked also was his relationship with Aunt May in this movie, where it was like Aunt May was, first of all, a lot younger than I've ever seen Aunt May before.
Yeah.
She was more of a mom figure than like a grandma figure. But I like that, where like he was getting ready for prom and she was showing him how to dance and like helping him pick his clothes and get a corsage. And
yeah. And she was young enough that like she still seemed hip enough. And the whole Aunt May character was weird. I don't know where I land on her character, but yeah. Mm.
I mean, Marissa Tomei is amazing, so yes. I did love her in the role, but it's every other Aunt May we've ever seen has been very specific and different from hers, and so maybe they were just trying to do something different for the sake of being the third installment in 10 years, and they needed to switch something up, but they also, Spider-Man says something in the film where he kind of alludes that there is more to Aunt May than we've seen, because he makes a comment that I just can't bring her in on the secret that I'm Spider-Man, because after everything she's been through, I don't want to put her through something else. And so I don't know if that's just, you're supposed to kind of in your mind say, oh, something happened to an Uncle Ben that we'll never meet. If that's what it is, or if
that's how I took it.
Or if there's something more to it to this character, I don't know. But I felt like it was intentional that he said, after everything she's been through, there's a history there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that kind of is what Ben was talking about earlier, where they found ways in dialogue to set up his backstory, but they don't need to tell that story for a third time.
Yeah, which is smart and understanding
of
the history of Spider-Man as a franchise, and I think like shows how successful this film is. Kind of another thing, like no good superhero film is good without having a good villain or an interesting villain at the same time. You kind of need that balance. And I would love to talk about the Vulture and Michael Keaton's character and characterization of that.
Michael Keaton was playing Birdman. Like, it was really funny. I know, Ben, you haven't seen Birdman.
No.
You're familiar that he was famous for, like, being Birdman. And he was Birdman in this movie. It was...
I have to imagine.
Someone called him Birdman at one point.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's great.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the film is very reverential to a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting to see, like, Michael Keaton... Like, Michael Keaton has a character arc, but in life... going from that Batman character to Birdman and kind of referencing his history there to then coming like almost back around and playing the Vulture, which like, whether you like it or not, is another Birdman. And it's so weird to see this like long-term arc play out in just the movies Michael Keaton plays and having them each reference backwards.
He seems fully on board with it too.
After
seeing him in that role and with all that history, it's just kind of like, of course Michael Keaton is another bird.
Well, I could see why he was Birdman, because he was a good Birdman. I mean, I liked him as the Vulture. That was his bad guy name, right? That was the official name.
Yes,
the
Vulture. Vulture.
Yeah,
I thought he was very good.
Yeah.
I also completely forgot he was in this film. So when they opened on him, I was like, oh, they got Michael Keaton for this bit role. This is so cool. And then,
it's a nice cameo.
Yeah, it's a nice cameo. And then also a guy walked in who looked exactly like Tom Hardy. And I was like, oh, all these famous actors just here for like this, you know, little scene.
Coming out to support Tom Holland. Our boy Tom Holland.
Yeah. And then I found out later that that was not actually Tom Hardy. And that also Michael Keaton is the villain.
Kind of
so
the main dude.
I had quite a trip in this film.
Yeah, I believe it. You know who else had quite a trip? Michael Keaton, going from like a blue collar worker to like killing people. And it felt, in a weird way, it felt very natural. Like what ultimately caused his turn from a story reason was that he was basically a manager of like a
Salvage company
yeah. specifically, which is a great role and job to have in a universe where there's a lot of destruction and feels very in-world. And that is ultimately taken over by a more official government agency with ties to Tony Stark. But they have a few alien pieces left, and they're able to start making a living, making weapons out of that alien technology. And that kind of accelerates his career and also his future. I almost wish, maybe it wasn't necessary, but like wish I understood the connection of the Vulture itself. Something interesting about the Spider-Man films is a lot of the villains come from insects or animals. And there's an interesting connection there, I feel. But like there was no reason for him to be a vulture and have talons and specific vulture-like.
It's like a metaphor. He salvages, he like makes his living from the dead, from the wreckage. Like vultures pick at corpses. And that's,
why lean into, like, why does he
choose to make the bird?
Yeah. Like, it could be anything.
Sure. In the story, it works as a metaphor. Why does Michael Keaton decide that he wants to be a bird?
Yeah.
Like, right. I get that.
What's the reason behind his character?
They just do, like, an 8 years later cut, and he has and he's a bird.
He's really into birds. Yes.
Do you think that
like, he never had a parrot on... He could have had, like, a parrot on his shoulder. Something like that in the first scene. And then accept it.
Like, he's just at the salvage yard with a parrot? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's just really into birds. I just want to know, like, something.
Well, maybe he was inspired by the Falcon.
The Falcon. That's what I thought. When I saw him, I actually thought it was the Falcon.
Me too. First. Yeah. The
Falcon?
Is that his name?
The guy
who's Captain America's buddy?
Who has
the flight suit.
Yeah.
War Machine? No, Captain America. Oh, yeah, maybe that's
the Falcon. I think it's the Falcon.
Sam Wilson is his character.
Yeah. Right.
That's who I thought he was the first time I saw him.
I could see that.
He has goggles and their outfits are very similar. The wings are the same exact shape, except the Vulture has those fans in them. And they seem to be made out of some super intense metal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Still just like, you know what I want to be? I want to be a Vulture.
And I'm going to include
talons in this. Like things that are very specific to a Vulture. Which are, like, all great at building that, like, character and who he is as a villain. But I guess I just don't also understand.
Well, it's also...
I mean, not that I need to, because that's...
It's also the age of superheroes where they kind of embrace the qualities of the animal or insect or whatever that they're named after.
So maybe that's just intrinsic to the
universe. I think in this universe, yeah. If you're going to have an outfit, you model it after... whatever it is that you're called, and you lean in. That's what you do. Right.
You gotta have a brand in this
yeah, age. Yeah.
And they all read Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In, and we are.
Although, you know what would have been great is if there was some kind of logo or something on his trucks that he'd purchased in that first scene that had a vulture on them.
Yeah, Vulture Corp. Hungry Buzzard, like we have.
Exactly.
Yeah. See, now that's exactly talking what I'm thinking of, yeah.
Like, right. That would also lean into your metaphor a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
Missed opportunity. Yeah, it's a small thing, but come on, guys.
I didn't notice it as I was watching the film, but as I think about it, like, there's no reason for it, but it's largely the smaller thing because the actual character Michael Keaton plays as this, like, starting blue collar and bring it to the elites and those that are in a system that ultimately just benefit themselves over and over and over again, and the small guys, as it was used in this film, ultimately getting nothing, is kind of an interesting and like timely reference to a lot of things.
So he's kind of painting himself as a Robin Hood-esque character, but he never redistributes the wealth. He has this really nice house. He's sending his daughter to a private school.
He's more comfortable just
being, he wants to be one of them.
Keeping it from those that are rich.
Right.
I mean, I guess in my mind, in his mind, he's probably redistributing it to all of his helpers and those people that were there on the salvage yard that were with them that ultimately entered into that criminal organization with him. So yeah, timely, I guess, in that way.
Right.
Which was interesting to see.
It was. What about how it played into the Marvel universe? Like, I thought it was interesting seeing Tony Stark in this movie in like a father figure kind of capacity.
Yeah, like slowly moving his progression and his characterization to something more of a leader, but not necessarily maybe taking an active role in the fights themselves.
Right.
Yeah, I could say that.
Yeah.
Which I think sets up for what we all think is going to happen in Infinity War, which is the passing of
various
mantles to other people.
Like, he's done. He's donezo. He's dead.
He's out.
Yeah, he's out.
He's out.
For sure.
This kid is out.
It felt a little bit like Deadpool to me in that it was a movie in this universe that was at times oddly empty of the characters you expect to see from that universe. Like, we saw a lot of shots of, I don't know if this is the correct name, but Avengers Tower and the new Avengers campus, and you didn't see anyone there except for Robert Downey Jr. It's like, is he the one guy that they signed on to this movie?
We did see Pepper Potts. That was a pretty big get.
Right.
That was exciting.
She showed up for like one scene.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Hey, remember her.
She looked flawless. Uh-huh. She has not aged.
No, she hasn't.
Nope. She looks great.
Everything at Goop seems to be working for her.
Yep. Yeah.
And I guess they did have some Captain America PSAs, which were fun.
Those are really fun.
Right.
But it helps build the universe.
I totally get what you mean, that it does feel empty despite these things taking place in the Avengers headquarters, essentially.
You never see any Avengers.
Wait, can we back up for a second? I just thought of something.
Yeah, sure.
Is it weird that Captain America was in all those PSAs when the Civil War is going on?
I thought it was referenced that those were like filmed before the Civil War.
Oh, was
because,
it?
Because when the gym teacher shows the Captain America fitness challenge.
The gym teacher who was also Hannibal Buress, which was so great.
Right, yeah. So when he shows that, he makes some remark like, funny how he turned out, but we still have to show this video or something like that.
Oh, he so did. Civil okay, War I missed over. That. Yeah.
Like, it's a school. Pretty it's much it's funny because it's a school system where they reuse the same videos for like 20 years. Yeah. So I actually really enjoyed that.
That's a good
that little
yeah.
throwaway okay. line.
All right.
Yeah. Just some really like smart, subtle things that like speak to the larger universe as a whole while still focusing on Spider-Man himself and like his duality of being a superhero, but also being in high school and being a kid and having parties and having dances like Homecoming and the tension that is around there.
I was really impressed by how young all the kids looked. I really bought into the fact that they were all in high school.
I
looked them all up on IMDb. They are definitely older than 20. All of them.
I really
not
liked
surprised.
Them. All the ones who had their ages listed on IMDb, at least.
Yeah, at least.
Right.
So even Tom Holland, he's 21. I really thought he was 16.
Really?
Yeah, he looks like a baby.
He does.
He does.
I like the 2002 Spider-Man.
But like, have you seen any like 16-year-olds recently?
I can't say that I have, but
I think like our idea of what 16-year-olds look a lot older because we still place ourselves and what we imagined ourselves as 16-year-olds. But I think 16-year-olds actually look really young to us now.
Totally fair, but I do think that Tom Holland looked like, and he was supposed to be the youngest Spider-Man that we've had. And I thought the high school around him looked younger. Yeah.
Yeah, I bought into it. I liked his struggle, kind of talking about what Ben brought up, the balance between being a superhero and a high school student, where his crush is really into Spider-Man. And he fantasizes for a little bit about, well, maybe I'll tell her I'm Spider-Man, or maybe I'll like swing into a party and say that I'm friends with Spider-Man, or something like that. And he ultimately gets really close to doing it, and then has to go do superhero stuff. But I thought it was kind of a funny power fantasy, which a lot of superhero movies are, where you think about, if I was a superhero, like would I use it to, you know, impress people? It would be cool to do it. You shouldn't do it, but it would be cool to. So kind of it showed some of those you know,
like internal debates.
Yeah, internal debates.
Also, like, internal idea of confidence and bravado and ego, even, while also balancing, like, who you think a superhero should actually be. Like, I felt like in those moments, Peter was like, all right, like, a superhero should be these things, but, like, I could also use it to my advantage to do these, but he makes a conscious choice not to ultimately, even if he's just about to.
Right.
And it shows, goes through that, like, growing pattern of adolescence in, like, starting to understand what choices matter and who you are as a person and what kind of core beliefs you have as you move into adulthood.
They also made this Spider-Man make some really, really bad decisions. Like, he, even though he has good intentions all of the time, there's so much collateral damage that happens because of him. And usually that bothers me because it's usually not acknowledged. Like, collateral damage in films is almost always just kind of not. And this whole film was about collateral damage, right? Because the Vulture is salvaging the damage from one of the Avengers wars. But my point is that he, because he was so young, you don't think that far ahead when you're 15. And so he was really acting like a 15-year-old with super strength and super smarts and just making really bad short-sighted decisions. So I would love to see if, as they develop his character, to make him a little more conscientious and make better choices that aren't so brash and
like you can dangerous. Actually see his
presence. Yeah, I think that's a good opportunity for them to develop that character a little more.
It's funny, that's another kind of mainstay of Spider-Man movies that we've seen, is he gets too big for his britches, he makes a decision, Uncle Ben dies. They didn't have Uncle Ben dying in this movie, but they still had that plot point of him taking on too much, being too confident in himself, and having to pay the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Which I actually really thought it was a cool scene. All the Spider-Man saves in this movie I thought were really cool. The one where he tries to hold the boat together.
Yeah, which is feels like it's referencing
it's totally Spider-Man 2. Yes,
which completely. Is like an incredible scene in that. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's great that they can, like, bring it back for this, but also feels a little weird. But I guess they switch it by him not ultimately saving everyone on
he
that
fails,
boat.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's and his
maybe
Uncle
that's
Ben
just
moment.
Enough. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was, then Iron Man comes in as this kind of external factor and takes away Spider-Man's suit. Like, that was unexpected. He took away Spider-Man's powers. Without his suit, he was,
yeah.
He didn't really, he's
I feel
not,
like I
he's
saw
not the,
that in one trailer, so oh, okay. It wasn't like a big surprise for me, but you having been relatively
oh yeah I didn't know that was gonna happen
stayed away from
I that. Try to stay away from trailers more and more
yeah
as they've changed I he's unlike the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man in that his suit is the source of a lot of his power, like his web spinning comes from his suit, not from his wrists, and his awareness, his extra sensory perception comes it is definitely aided by the suit. So when he gets it taken away, you're like, okay, yeah, he's really limited by
well,
what
even,
he can do. He can climb
Andrew,
buildings and that's about it.
Even Andrew Garfield, I mean, he manufactured the webs, but he had the spider senses and the reaction time and everything that was built into him that he got from the spider.
I guess for some clarity, in this film, he's given a suit by Iron Man, and there's essentially a Jarvis stand-in, whose name is Karen, who is basically the onboard AI. He also has a lot of external web options and toys that are kind of gifted to him by Iron Man a lot.
It feels like an Iron Man suit,
yeah,
but shaped
totally does.
In the Spider-Man. And like, at the very end of the movie, when he reveals to him kind of the next version of the suit, should he join the Avengers, it really looks like an Iron Man, you know, superhero suit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I kind of felt relieved that he said no to that suit. And when he went home and he still got a suit back, it was his original one.
Which was very comic book-y. Like, it was the least shiny and chrome of all the Spider-Man suits I've seen up to this point. It was really, like, primary red, primary blue. no like embossing or anything. It looked like his costume looks in the in the comics.
But that was interesting. Yeah, and one thing I did really love in this film was kind of the emotion that was gotten across through his eyes.
I love that.
And it's something you kind of lose in some of the other Spider-Man films, and you definitely saw it in Deadpool, but to bring that over to this one and to, in those harder moments, understand his emotion through how his eyes react does a lot for that character. So I think it was a great choice, even if I remember initially seeing that first photo of Spider-Man and being like, oh, those eyes don't look great. But once you see them in motion and to have that, it really does a lot for that character.
Also very comic booky. Yeah. Like I loved that. I thought the eyes were really cool, and I was excited about it when I saw the initial trailers, and it paid off.
Yeah, paid off. Tom Holland, solid Spider-Man.
Solid Spider-Man. Where would you guys rank it with your other Spider-Man movies? You don't need to feel obligated to defend any movie.
Well, what I'm curious about is all of the Spider-Man movies.
All of them.
So, okay, so this is like a power ranking of like all six.
I feel like it's worth bringing in the other films at this point.
Okay.
Sure.
It's hard to talk about the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man trilogy without talking about that second film, which is so strong.
So I haven't seen The Amazing Spider-Man 2, but I'm just going to go ahead and say I think the sixth movie should be Spider-Man 3.
Oh, okay. The bottom of the pack.
Yeah, the bottom of the pack. It's got a lot of weirdness.
The Amazing Spider-Man would probably be like right there, you know, two
mm-hmm.
would probably be right there alongside it.
Okay. So they're bottom of the pack.
Of the pack. Okay.
This is going to be the interesting one. If we're saying we know Spider-Man 2 is going to be pretty high up on the list, what are we dropping here? Spider-Man, Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man, or Spider-Man Homecoming?
I mean,
I'm going to go with Spider-Man.
Yep.
The first Tobey Maguire movie.
Absolutely.
Spots in there.
Yeah. The other two are somehow, they're like kind of down at the bottom. I don't think it's worth ranking them, but it's definitely right above them. And then after that, I would go with, The Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay.
And then I would say Homecoming, and then I would say Spider-Man 2.
I haven't seen Spider-Man 2 in so long, I can't speak to it, but everyone seems to really like it.
I think I'm in the same boat. I would definitely go Spider-Man 2 above The Amazing Spider-Man, and then it's just like, I need to rewatch it. I don't know. I know it will have those moments that are great, but I don't know if overall the film is going to feel as like refreshing as this did at moments, even though this is just another Marvel film in a long series of Marvel films that all have very similar tone to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think it's a hard ranking too, because this movie gets a lot of help from some of our favorites. Like the Captain America PSAs were really funny.
And it only works because
it's in that universe. And same with having Robert Downey Jr. in it. It's a great option for the new Spider-Man that the old ones didn't have. So.
And also CGI has...
graphics have just
come such a long way that like you can have these really incredible moments that you have in this film that you're just not really going to get in that Doc Ock and Spider-Man in Spider-Man 2. So like it's like this film is just visually a treat in a lot of ways, in ways that like Wonder Woman and DC films just don't feel like in the same way. And so, like, I can't really, without watching Spider-Man 2 again, I can't make a choice between.
Same. That's where I'm at. It sounds like we're all kind of in the same boat. This is really high up on the list. Maybe better than Spider-Man 2 or not. I
stand by my ranking. If anyone wants to watch those movies and challenge me, I'm open to it. But
I'd be open to watching Spider-Man 2.
Okay.
Yeah, I would watch that now. But yeah, so it's good. Spider-Man Homecoming.
It's good. Yes.
Definitely good. Definitely.
That's the
probably
final
my
review.
Favorite Marvel movie I've seen in a long time. It
Yeah.
I've been kind of getting a little tired of it. There's some I haven't even seen yet, like Doctor Strange. Yep. Unless it's like going to be a really special Marvel movie, it's hard to get me like super excited about it again. And this movie made me really excited about Spider-Man. I really enjoyed it. And I really like the Spider-Man brand. I like this movie.
You look so happy.
Yeah. I feel good. You're just
coming
high
out this on a Spider-Man film.
I'm high on Spider-Man.
just get that Spider-Man straight to my veins.
There were some good visual gags in this movie.
Yeah.
A couple that come to mind is Spider-Man obviously relies on web swinging to get through the city quick. And there's a scene where he's just swinging through the city. He's moving really quick. It's a really fast scene. And then he gets to a golf course and he tries to web something. And you see that there's nothing out there for him to web on. And the camera zooms out and he just is this tiny person on this big golf course. And he just has to run through it. And it's hilarious because
it understands the limits of his power and actually uses it to comedic value. And
right.
Which I don't think I've seen really in, or I can't remember any moments like that before in a Spider-Man film where like he is in a location where he just does not have the height and maneuverability that he needs for his webs to actually work.
Right. That one was good. There was another one where he miscalculated an arc and he swings and he just hits the ground. So good.
I think that got like a little bit of an audible gasp at. Like there was a couple moments in this film that had some good reactions out of the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I noticed. Now, if we were to look at superhero movies for 2017, and I will leave you two up to decide if Logan enters this list, because I've heard from a lot of people that it's not really a superhero film. But what's your favorite superhero film?
I mean, for sure, year? Logan. 100% Logan. Okay. Yeah.
Logan was really, really good. So but different. I get why people say it's not a superhero movie, because it doesn't have, like, in the car ride home, Ben, you were saying a lot of Marvel movies feel very the same. Like, there's a superhero kind of plot structure. Love it or hate it, or more likely just like it. Yeah. I think that's where everyone mostly falls on that. And Logan did not follow that structure whatsoever. It was more of a dramatic, almost like it was kind of a dad movie.
I've heard it referred to as a Western.
Okay, yeah, I could see that. Oh, totally. Very, very different take. So I think it was probably the best movie made using a superhero franchise.
But now if we're talking about superhero film
as a genre, then you can't include Logan in there, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think it falls in that genre, and I think Spider-Man beats it. But I think objectively, Logan's a better
film. What else has come out this year? Like, I don't even...
Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah.
Wonder Woman was good.
Didn't see that.
Wonder Woman felt a little more by the numbers to me. I mean, great performances, good writing, like doing a lot for
incredible moments.
It does.
It knows how to pull emotion at very key moments, and there's a section of that film that is like near perfect. But I think the beginning and the end, like, kind of, it feels very rote and dry, and I know what to expect, and I'm tired of villains that just like put on a coat of armor and I have no reason to dislike them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just there and I'm supposed to hate them because they are evil without anything more than that. And I feel like Wonder Woman definitely falls into that trap where like Spider-Man Homecoming doesn't in the same way. And so I think I would ultimately put Spider-Man above it and then probably Wonder Woman and then Guardians of the Galaxy 2 falling too.
Haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy, but that sounds like my ranking too. I mean, the fact that I haven't seen it speaks to my level of excitement about it. Like, I'm interested, and I bet I would like it.
Yeah,
but
it's not bad.
It's with every movie, you have to make a decision. Is this worth 2 hours of my life? Is this better than the other 5,000 movies I have at my fingertips?
And
Guardians of the Galaxy hasn't won that battle yet.
I'm worried we're getting to a point where all they're ever going to make are superhero movies.
There's a lot.
There's so many.
It's impossible to watch them all and keep track of it.
Yeah, I think, like, probably, I'm going to say probably every year from here on out, we're probably going to get six or so until the series just start to die out and the genre starts to die out.
Like 3DC.
We're so oversaturated with superhero films. Either that, or the flip side of that is we start getting more interesting stuff like Logan, because then they view the superhero format as something of a template in which to tell different stories and more interesting stories mm-hmm. and stories that aren't that typical structure, which, hey, I would probably be
Deadpool, for. Same thing. Yeah. Very, very different take on a superhero movie.
Up to a point, until you get to that last act.
Sure.
It's hitting the same moments every other superhero film does.
Yeah. It's kind of disappointing.
I don't think, I don't think Deadpool is really that different. I think you just really liked it.
Oh, I thought that they, like, actually, it was very violent. It was very R-rated.
R-rated, but that doesn't mean it deviates that far from the normal superhero plotline. There's more blood, and they drop the F-bomb more often. But it's pretty violent numbers.
Yeah, like, in the end of
Well, it's more Deadpool meta. There's more fourth wall breaking and
totally. Yeah. And it does differentiate.
His character is very different. Mm. Like, there's no other superhero that is remotely close to his personality. Which is why he's fun to watch, but...
Yeah. I also just haven't thought about Deadpool much since I watched that film.
Oh, you did watch it?
Yeah, I've seen it. That's why I can say that the last half of that act...
Right.
Or the last act of that film is just like...
Okay. It's the big climactic battle.
Yeah. And the battle scenes are not what Deadpool excels at. At least in that film. Like, you came for that character, that fourth wall breaking, and some of the closer action scenes... to have them feel more meaningful. And then when it just becomes a slugfest kind of at the end, it's like, okay, we've kind of seen this before. You're not doing anything interesting or new.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But hopefully they'll differentiate that in Deadpool.
Deadpool 2 comes out
next year.
Ooh.
So we have Black Panther next year. Deadpool 2. X-Men Dark Phoenix. Infinity War.
Is it X-Men New Mutants also?
X-Men New Mutants. We'll see if that actually comes out. And I'm sure that Aquaman come out next year.
Okay.
Aquaman for sure comes out next year.
What about Justice League or any of the DC this comics? Year.
Justice League. Well, Aquaman is DC.
Oh, right.
But Justice League is for sure coming out this year.
Oh. There's so many.
It's a lot.
It's so many.
And I'm not getting that. I mean,
and they're not
Infinity War, yeah.
No.
Black Panther, maybe.
Black Panther will probably
Deadpool 2, yes. The other ones, I don't even know if I'm going to watch them.
I think Deadpool 2, I'll wait and see. That may be like a rent or something like that.
We'll see.
Yeah. Any of the X-Men is like completely up in the air at this point. I'm like,
could be good. They're so hit or miss.
Could be bad. No idea.
Very true.
So, Spider-Man Homecoming was good. I create a little game for us to play about Spider-Man villains, and it's called Spider-Man Villain or Stephen King Short Story.
Let's do it.
Here we go.
You two keep score. I'm going to read off a list of names, and you have to tell me if it's a Spider-Man villain or a Stephen King short story.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Big Man.
I'm gonna go Spider-Man villain.
I'm gonna go villain as well.
Correct.
Woo! Nice.
One and one for both of you. The Finisher.
I'm gonna go Spider-Man villain.
I'm gonna go Stephen King.
It is a Spider-Man villain. Andre, you're up. The Lawnmower Man.
Stephen King short story?
Yeah, Stephen King for me.
Correct.
Nice. I'm 3 for 3.
Big Wheel.
Spider-Man villain.
Spider-Man villain.
Correct.
Okay.
The Boogeyman.
Stephen King.
I'm going to go Stephen King as well.
Correct.
Ho-ho.
Big Driver.
Oh, you've got Big Man and Big Driver.
And Big Wheel.
And Big Wheel.
I very purposely chose multiple bigs.
Okay. This is Big Driver.
Big Driver.
I'm going to go Stephen King.
Correct.
Nice.
The Looter.
Spider-Man.
Stephen King.
Spider-Man. Tied up. Video Man.
Spider-Man.
Correct. Gray Matter.
Ooh, that one's tough. I'm going to go Stephen King.
Correct. The Spot.
Stephen King.
Spider-Man.
Woo! Oh, man. Which I think puts Leanna on top at the very end.
Oh, that was the last one.
So, as I was coming up with other options for this game, I thought about doing Spider-Man villain or roller coaster.
Ooh.
And I'll go through a couple of these real quick.
That's a good one.
Aftershock.
Roller coaster.
Yeah, roller coaster.
Both. El Toro.
Roller coaster.
Both.
Kind of both, because there's El Toro Negro in Spider-Man.
Okay.
Banshee.
That's for sure a roller coaster, but it's probably both.
It's in the X-Men franchise, so like there's some crossover there.
Sure.
Nitro.
Both.
It's in the Marvel universe, so kind of both.
Okay.
Prowler.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man.
Both.
Okay.
Talon.
Both?
Spider-Man.
Both.
Talon doesn't sound like a fun roller coaster.
Yeah, these are getting Hellcat. Worse and worse.
Both.
It has to be both,
it's
right?
It's kind of both. Okay. Because Hellcat is in the Avengers universe. Mindbender.
Both.
Yeah, both.
Kind of. Meru the Mindbender is a Thor Spider-Man foe. So you can see why that didn't work out.
Yeah,
because a lot of those were a mess.
I mean, maybe they named the roller coasters after the villains.
I could totally
see that.
Like they just went through and then just like took everything that you could in some way relate back to the Spider-Man, but differentiated enough so they don't have to pay licensing fees.
Totally.
Yeah.
El Toro Negro. Sure. Yeah.
Get rid of Negro. It's El Toro. It's a bullfighting roller coaster.
We'll paint it red.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's trying to rock you out of your seat.
Easy.
Exactly what you want out of a roller coaster.
Aftershock. That's a tough one, actually. How would you design an Aftershock roller coaster?
I think Aftershock is one where it's the one where it like pulls you up backwards, and then you go through the track, and then you do the whole thing backwards.
Mm. Oh, God.
So you feel
it. So it like launches you, and then the aftershock is going through it again.
Okay.
For sure, that's what it is.
All right.
Wow.
That's a good idea.
That's rough.
Banshee is just one where you scream a lot, because it's...
Yeah, like it's...
It might be a little scary, too. Maybe you go through the dark at one point.
I could see that, yeah.
Nitro. That's just... You're going fast.
There's fire.
Oh, Nitro. I see that, too.
Yeah, they totally shoot fire at you.
Mindbender just has a lot of
loops. Yeah.
Right. Something Space Mountain-esque. You can't even tell what's going on.
Yeah, that's true. Last time I went to Space Mountain, I have no idea what happened to us.
I know. I was curious to see. We Googled Space Mountain with the lights on so we could see what the track looks like.
It looks crazy.
It does.
Yeah, I know. I'm always worried about putting my hands up. Just
don't.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, don't do
it. I'm so worried about that. Like,
you will lose an arm.
And I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a good time to me or anyone behind me if I'm in the front of the car.
No, definitely not.
Can you imagine just all of a sudden a disembodied or like a limb flies at
you? No, Ben, I can't imagine that. Please don't lift your arms on a ride.
I don't want to bend my mind that way. No, thank you.
When was the last time you went to Space Mountain?
We went in Paris.
That's true. Okay.
We went to Euro Disneyland because we had seen enough museums.
Ready for some fun.
We were ready for a good time.
We had a good time.
We did. It was great.
I like roller coasters.
I do too. We really want to go to a theme park.
Yeah. But I also like never want to actually go to a theme park because there's just a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's a good reason not to go to the theme park.
That's a good reason not to go to most places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go on a weekday during the school year. That's what we did.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Yeah, I know. That's the way to do it.
Being an adult. Hashtag adulting.
I know. We need to go to Wild Rapids.
You mean Wild Waves?
Wild Rapids sounds better than Wild
Waves. Is that the one that's in Idaho?
No, it's like nearby.
Okay.
That's Wild Waves.
Yeah.
Wild Rapids is made up. It's not real place. I mean, it probably exists somewhere. Yeah, we've gone off the rails.
Wild Rapids, Waterside Park in Alberta, Canada. There is a Wild Rapids.
Is that the one you wanted to go to, though?
No, it's
not. Okay.
This has been another episode of Munch, the podcast form. Our post for the initial Spider-Mans is up at getmunchedup.com. Has a lot of great photos of the food we took. Has an In Defense Of by Leanna and I for our respective Spider-Man films. And we put a lot of effort into it, so please take a look at that. You can find us at Get Munched Up on Instagram, Get Munched Up on Twitter, Get Munched Up or Munch Blog on Facebook. And finally, we would love it if you could send in some comments or questions. We'd love to answer them at getmunchedup@gmail.com. You can find this podcast on iTunes or wherever you find podcasts, and we would love it if you rate, comments, and subscribe. And with that, if you were a Spider-Man villain, what would your villain name be?
Oh, man.
I'm going to give you those quick questions.
Yeah, so wow, okay.
You think on your feet.
How about... Well, it's really hard to come up with something that hasn't been done already.
You could just like, think, I was gonna think say of a roller Catwoman. Coaster and just be that. Just a just good roller coaster name.
Okay.
Maybe a Nightcrawler. That sounds like a cool name.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is pretty good.
Sure. Mm-hmm. He's in the X-Men universe, but I'll take it.
Okay. Crossover. He's back. You got one?
No. The only roller coaster name that comes to mind that would work is Viper. Okay. But I don't feel like I'm a Viper.
No. Like, ooh. I mean, it could be like the Lioness or something like that. Like... I'm I going with that. The, like that I cat see angle. That. For
yeah,
you.
It's definitely a cat. Like yeah, for sure, it's
definitely
a cat.
A cat.
Can I change mine?
Yes, you definitely can.
Cyrus the Virus.
Oh God! All right.
And with that, this podcast is over. Good day.